Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. This week we'll be talking a little bit about the transition to using the DAISY digital format and the development of some of the DAISY readers, such as the NLS player and the Victor reader stream.
Jerry Chevalier was a key contributor to all of that, and we'll be talking with him about his commitment to accessibility and his work in that field. But first, for our tip of the week, this week's tip comes from Jerry Chevalier.
Many of my friends that I've met who have RP or other forms of progressive vision loss will tell me that they denied using the white cane as long as possible. And it was certainly true in my case. I made some mistakes in avoiding the use of the white cane, for example. Probably I should have used it at least 2 years or 3 years before I did. And so when encountering new prospective clients, I made some significant mistakes. Like I would miss the fact that they held out their hand to shake it, and I would turn away from them and maybe catch that out of the corner of my eye. Well, it was too late at that point, because if you hastily turn back and shake the hand, they say, oh, well, he had second thoughts about shaking my hand. So you've already dug a hole, which is hard to get out of, because now they're wondering about your personality or what kind of strange person wouldn't even shake my hand. I had another person hand me a report, some kind of a financial statement, and he said, can you make my computer produce a report like this? And I looked at it, and he said, well, you're holding it upside down. So needless to say, I didn't get that client. And after a couple of encounters like that, I thought, why am I doing this? Why would I have them believe that I'm some kind of strange personality who doesn't shake hands, or that I'm daydreaming and not looking at the material he's giving me? They're making all kinds of bad conclusions, and it would be far better for them to simply know that I can't see. So the next time I had a prospective client, I did bring the white cane, and as fate would have it, this person turned out to be a very good business contact, and I did work for that person on a retainer for more than 10 years until I actually wound up my business. So in my experience, at least, there was never any advantage to try to hide the vision impairment. So I learned that the hard way, and everybody has to make their own decisions in that regard. But for me, there was certainly no advantage to trying to pretend I could see when I couldn't.
It can be difficult to make that transition, though, and admit to yourself and sort of showcase to the world that you do need maybe these extra assistive aids. I know I went through a period like that, too. When I was younger, I used to be able to see holding a book really a couple of inches from my nose. But, you know, I really should have used a cane crossing streets, and I didn't. And it took a while and some more vision loss until I finally started using a cane.
Let's start by meeting Jerry Chevalier and learning about his background and his career before he got into developing DAISY standards and players.
Hello, thanks Peter and Nancy for the interview. My name is Jerry Chevalier. I'm residing in Edmonton, Alberta, in Canada, and I have been involved in technology all of my life. I graduated in the mid-70s with a degree in computer science, and then I fell in love with developing software on, in those days, mini computers, and began developing an entrepreneurial consulting business to build software for small businesses, specifically medical clinics. And I specialized in the processing of accounting and front office applications like appointments and electronic claims to the health authorities and so on and so forth. And I wound down my business in 2004 and became the product manager for Victor Reader at Humanware. And I worked there for close to 10 years, about 9.5 years. And I'm now just retired and continuing my interest in technology as a retired person.
And you're visually impaired, right?
I have RP, retinitis pigmentosa. So I started suffering vision loss early on in my business. And about 10 years in, around 1988, I approached the CNIB in Canada here with a request for help because I wasn't quite sure how to deal with diminishing vision loss. And they, for the first time, introduced me to assistive technologies such as screen magnification. I was an early user of Zoom text on DOS, for example, TV readers. And I was a big user of a now defunct telesensory company. They had a product called Super Vista, which I was a great fan of and used for many years. And eventually I transitioned to complete vision loss and had to use JAWS and other screen readers.
Now, for anybody who doesn't know, CNIB is the Canadian National Institute for the Blind?
Yes, that's correct. They don't tend to expand the acronym much anymore. They just call themselves CNIB, but they are the vision rehab service for blind people in Canada, and one of their major services is the library talking books and braille books.
So how old were you when you started losing your vision?
Well, I was diagnosed when I was around 18, 19 years old, but I had pretty functional vision then. I had some tunnel vision and night blindness. I decided it would never get as bad as the doctors told me it could be, and I just pursued my career. I had an interest in computers and developing software. But as I mentioned, I later learned that the retinitis pigmentosa was a reality and it was starting to impact on how I could get my everyday work done. And I give a lot of credit to CNIB because when I first visited them, I had no idea that there was such a thing as a talking software on then the early Apple computers, and that there were things called closed-circuit televisions that could enlarge print up to 60 times if you needed it to be magnified to that extent. And so they encouraged me to struggle on. There was a point where I was going to give up and stay home with our two young children, and my wife was going to continue her career because she had interrupted it to stay at home with the kids, at least until they were in school. So those were pretty stressful times, wondering how I was going to sustain a business and look after the family when it seemed to be harder and harder to see something every day when I went to work, particularly a computer screen.
Many of the people we've talked with on the show have been blind since birth, but a number of them have gone blind as an adult. And that has to be a more difficult transition. And we've seen different kinds of responses to that. Some people kind of plow through it like you did and find a successful way of continuing doing what they want to do. And some people just kind of give up and decide they can't do that and do something else. And I'm wondering, what was your mechanism, or how do you think you made it through this process?
Well, there's several things. My partner, my wife, was very supportive, and she was looking after the home front, which allowed me to focus completely on my business and my software and consulting work, so that I was able to aggressively pursue the technology and the adaptations. Secondly, I was about 10 years into my business when all of this started happening, so I did have a portfolio of clients. I had an income source that I did not want to lose, and it seemed to me totally unnecessary to give up. I had the skills that my clients wanted to pay for. I had a good reputation already in my market that I was active in, and it just didn't seem logical to give up. I didn't want to sit at home in a rocking chair listening to talking books, that's for sure. I enjoyed what I was doing. I wanted to get better at it, and I wanted to continue. So like everything else I've done in life, there was a solution at hand, and I just had to figure out how to make it work. That was my attitude.
So it sounds like you had a very good support system in place all around.
That's right.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
This week's focus topic is Jerry's involvement in the development of DAISY standards and the NLS Player and Victor Reader products that play them.
Later on, you became instrumental in helping the technology progress to move from audio books to digital books. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Around about 1996 or 97, the CNIB up here in Canada decided they would become an earlier adopter of the DAISY technology, and they wanted to replace their cassette talking book service with a digital format, namely DAISY on CDs. And when I learned about this, I went to one of their offices and looked at some of the early technology that would play these books. And at that time, I saw the original prototype Victor Reader Pro, it was called, from then Visuaid, which later became Humanware. And I saw the Plextor CD talking book player from Japan. And there were some prototype books, and I listened to them. And I became very enthusiastic about the possibilities of being able to navigate digital audio in a structured way, the same way that you would navigate the chapters and pages in a print book. So I volunteered to work with CNIB. They had a committee formed with included technology people and management people, and I became a volunteer in that committee and worked through the transition with them. And through that process, I eventually joined the board of directors for the CNIB Library for the Blind, and became a spokesman, an evangelist for DAISY and the value of DAISY digital talking books, spoke at conferences and so on. And in fact, that's one of the things that exposed me later to Humanware and their need for a Victor Reader product manager. So it became not only a fun and desirable volunteer activity over a number of years, but it also helped in my networking to introduce me to the major technology providers for DAISY talking books.
Just for people who may not know about DAISY, can you give a quick description of what that is and what the benefits are?
Well, DAISY is it's spelled like the flower, but it's an acronym for Digital Accessible Information System. And it allows electronic books, either in e-text or in recorded audio, to be compiled in such a way that you can navigate the audio or navigate the text. And so a digital audiobook in DAISY format is really a collection of files that include either the recorded audio or the text, but in addition, they include special files that let you navigate that text in a structured way, such that you can move by paragraph, by sentence, by character, even in the textbooks. And in the audiobooks, you can typically move by page, chapter, and section. So you need special software to play back these books, and that software exists on a myriad of devices, including PCs and mobile phones, smartphones, and specialized players such as the Victor Readers from Humanware, particularly the Victor Reader Stream and the Victor Reader Stratus.
And that is really a big advance over the way we used to have to read things on audio tapes.
Correct, because with audio tapes, of course, you only have sequential access. If the audio tapes, as they were in the past, were recorded with beep tones every page, at least you could fast forward and count the beeps and know when you were transitioning from page to page or chapter to chapter. But that was the best we could do with a recorded DAISY book. You can actually dial in a page number on the keypad of the player and jump directly to that page from the table of contents.
Well, I'm sighted and I love listening to audiobooks, but even getting them in MP3 format, downloading them from the library or any other source, my player has sub-minimal capabilities. It can go forwards and backwards, and that's about it for navigating.
So tell us about the relationship of DAISY to commercial EPUB books these days. That's a great story.
EPUB is kind of an evolution of the DAISY book. It's a way to bring the DAISY navigation technology into the mainstream ebook industry. So EPUB is kind of the latest generation of DAISY. And for all of us who are blind or vision impaired, we're happy to see that, because it means that the specialized DAISY books from the vision impaired community has now progressed to the commercial ebook industry. And so we have much, much more available to us today than we did even 10, 15 years ago.
So you're suggesting that the current EPUB format actually has all of the DAISY capabilities?
Yes, it does. It has, well, a subset of them, but the major ones are there. Certainly the navigation and the markup necessary to make the navigation work is there.
And interestingly, that kind of capability came to the blind before it came to the larger sighted community.
Yes, the DAISY Consortium was instrumental in making books navigable for print disabled people, primarily blind and vision impaired, but also people who are print disabled from other situations, physical disabilities that prevent them from using a book, or learning disabilities such as dyslexia that would make reading print very difficult. And so that early work was done by the DAISY Consortium and eventually made its way into the electronic publishing industry.
Now, prior to this interview, we were talking a little bit about your involvement in designing and developing the first digital audio players. And I thought that was kind of interesting to see how the National Library Service, the NLS, had worked with a lot of companies to sort of coordinate efforts to design an optimal player. Can you talk a little bit about that development?
Well, NLS was very involved in the design of the ANSI NISO. Here's a bit of a technical term. ANSI NISO is the standards industry in the U.S. that approved the DAISY standard and evolved it into the version of DAISY that they needed for their talking book service. And not only did they help in establishing that standard, which was very important in the progress of DAISY over time, but they also took a very scientific and a very disciplined approach to designing their talking book player that they would use to provide these talking books to their clients, to their members. And one of the things they did was put out a design contract. They wanted somebody to design the player from the ground up and with user input. And HumanWare at the time bid on that contract and was awarded the contract around 2005. And I was part of the design team. And one of the things that I liked about NLS was that they were very keen that we do proper usability studies. So we actually started the design process of the NLS player. Of course, being HumanWare, we had some experience of our own with the Victor Reader CD players at the time. This was prior to the Victor Reader Stream, but it was certainly around the time that the Victor Reader CD players were in the marketplace. So we took that knowledge, but we were able to expand it by doing the usability studies that NLS wanted us to pursue with their members across the country. So we interviewed all manner of people that would use the talking book service, from 5 and 6 year olds, all the way up to 80-year-olds, 90-year-olds, and veterans who had been blinded as a result of military service, you name it. We had input from all of those people, and we learned a great deal about what the physical interface should look like, what kind of buttons worked and didn't work, what kind of layout worked and didn't work, and how the audio navigation should be optimized to meet their requirements. So that was a really great learning experience for me and a real pleasure to meet so many of those people that were using talking books.
Well, I think all that systematic and disciplined work really paid off. I mean, their human interface to their devices is really excellent, very easy and functional to use.
They did a very credible job. I mean, HumanWare worked hard as well, but the other people that were involved were equally dedicated to the project, the people from NLS themselves. We had people from the TRACE Research Center at the U of Wisconsin that were responsible for the physical handicapped requirements for the interface. And we had NFB was involved in terms of approaching blind people and making sure that the needs of the blind people were met. And we had an industrial design and electronics manufacturing company who specialized in medical technology. That was a US-based company that were responsible for all of the plastic and the electronics and the buttons and everything that actually made up the physical player.
So we talked a little bit with Matthew Janusowski last year in show 1332 about the Victor Reader Stream products. Can you just summarize what those are and what they're all about?
Well, the Victor Reader Stream was a desire on the part of HumanWare and our whole design committee to take the Victor Reader Classic. At the time, we had a player called the Victor Reader Classic, which was a CD player. And we knew that libraries wanted to get away from CDs, and they wanted to have eventually internet-based books and downloads and they wanted to use alternative medias to distribute the books, such as SD cards or USB flash media. And the blind people themselves, they didn't want to lug around a CD player, which was fairly bulky. They wanted a pocket-sized player. So with all of this in mind, we thought the time was right and the electronics were advanced enough that we should be able to miniaturize the Victor Reader CD player, remove the CD drive, make it more compact, keep all the interface and button layouts that were working on the CD player, but put the whole thing into a package that hopefully was no bigger than a pack of cards. And so that became the Victor Reader Stream project. And as I said, the NLS, at the same time we were developing the Victor Reader Stream, was working on launching their digital talking book service. So we wanted to make sure that the ANSI NISO navigable books would play on the Victor Reader Stream as well as the current DAISY standard books. And so all of that came together around late 2007 in a product that we launched called the Victor Reader Stream. And we were fortunate enough at the launch to be able to not only support the DAISY books in Canada, but right across Europe, and as well the new ANSI NISO digital books that had been just launched that summer from the NLS service in the US. So we had suddenly a player that was very popular because it was pocket size, easy to use. It could play all the DAISY books around the world, and it had synthesized voice that allowed us to put e-text books on there as well. In its native form, it was an MP3 player, so we were able to play music. And so suddenly blind people had something that for them was revolutionary, because all of these media formats could now be played in a single, reasonably priced, pocket-sized format.
That had to be a lot of fun and very rewarding to work on.
Oh yeah, it was for me. It was probably one of the major highlights of my career, because having started out my career as a sighted person and then transitioning to become totally blind by the time I launched the Victor Reader Stream with my team, I really felt privileged to be able to shepherd a product that meant so much to not only myself, but my colleagues in the blind and vision impaired community.
Not surprisingly, we've done a large number of shows about the DAISY format, the NLS digital audio book player, and a variety of commercial book readers that you can use for reading DAISY books, all the way back to our very first show that aired the first week of January in 2011. And we will have links to all of those episodes of Eyes on Success in the show notes for this show. Now for this week's final item, what Jerry's been doing in his well-deserved retirement. So now that you're retired, I gather you're still involved in all sorts of interesting activities. Can you talk about some of those?
I still do a little bit of ad hoc consulting for Humanware. I'm still a volunteer at CNIB, but this time with CNIB, I'm trying to do more volunteer work face-to-face with clients, specifically helping older retired folks learn how to use technology. As you know, there's a lot of people that become blind later in life due to macular degeneration and other age-related problems. So working with them to introduce them to technology is a hugely rewarding volunteer activity. I'm also playing with digital audio, having used it so much as a big part of my life over the years. I'm trying to understand better how you produce digital audio on the computer and edit it. That's just a fun project, and I've done a few little projects in that regard. And I'm getting involved with some other activities, like the local university here has an adult 50-plus learning program, and I'm on the program development committee for that. And I'm trying to exercise more and do more physical activities, since I don't have to be a desk jockey for many hours a day like I was when I was working. So just quite a long list of things that I wasn't able to do in the past that I'm happy to try now.
It is amazing how busy you can become when you're retired. People think, well, what do those retirees do? But I can tell you, we go to the gym a lot more these days, spend a lot more time outside, and get involved in a lot of these volunteer activities. There are just a plethora of activities out there to do.
including Eyes on Success, which seems to have taken over our lives.
Well, I can imagine Eyes on Success must be a very busy activity, because from what little I have learned about digital audio, there is a lot of work to do. When you listen to a half-hour podcast, I now understand that there must be many hours to produce that 30 minutes from the initial recording down to deciding what you're going to edit out and edit in, and then hosting the whole thing on the website. So, yes, I can imagine you spend many, many hours bringing these podcasts to our community, and it's certainly much appreciated.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, fortunately, it's a lot of fun. I mean, it's great to be able to meet people like you and with very motivational stories around the world and new technologies, and it's nice to be able to share that with others.
If you really want to know what goes into creating each episode of Eyes on Success, listen to show number 1352. It's only half an hour, but it tells you everything under the hood.
And you'll find links to that in our show notes at www.eyesonsuccess.net. So I was a bit confused as to how to pronounce your name. How is it really pronounced?
A lot of people ask how to pronounce the name.
Well, you should have heard the conversation between the two of us, because I saw it in print and, you know, Maurice Chevalier has a little bit of name recognition. Only Pete only ever heard it from Jaws, and that's not what Jaws says.
No, that's not what Jaws says, but you've, Nancy, you've pronounced it perfectly. If you want to tell Jaws to pronounce it, I have the dictionary phonetic as S-H-V-A-L-Y-A-Y.
You should see how we spell Torpy to get Samantha to pronounce it in the introduction.
The things that we learn to put up with.
Yeah.
So, of course, Pete had to have some fun with Samantha and Eloquence duking it out on the proper pronunciation.
Well, I pronounce your name Jerry Chevalier.
And I pronounce it Jerry Chevalier.
But he likes us to pronounce it Jerry Chevalier.
Okay, I can live with pronouncing his name Jerry Chevalier.
I guess that's a deal then.
Okay, it's a deal.
I guess that is a deal. I hope you enjoyed listening to Jerry and a little bit about the history of DAISY and the development of some of these digital readers.
That's it for show number 1438. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about Career Connect from the American Foundation for the Blind with Joe Streche, who's a representative of Career Connect. This is a way that people who are looking for a potential career can interact with people who already work in whatever field they're looking for. Pete's been a volunteer as a physicist for years and has gotten a bunch of phone calls, but there are people out there in many, many different kinds of careers, and you can find them through the AFB's Career Connect. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpy and Peter Torpy, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also follow us on Facebook and on audioboo.fm at Eyes on Success, or Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.